Welcome to the Scottish podcast by Scottish people about Scottish things. We're three lifelong friends and displaced Scotsmen who get together to talk about our homeland, the weird stuff that happens there, and to remind us why we are the way we are. Welcome to This'll Do Nicely. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's story with Rory. I am Rory, and I am joined by the ineffable Johnny Naismith and the slightly bloated Christopher Irvin.
Hey, that calzone was last week, all right?
Like, you're still holding it in your cheeks.
Long indigestion.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody, to week two of the Annie Lennox experience with This'll Do Nicely pod. Yeah, if you didn't listen to last week's episodes, please go back and do it. We're going to talk about Annie. But do you want to tell them about our competition? I've heard enough of my voice.
Yeah. So just to remind everybody that we're still running this competition on basically leave us an audio message either on our email, thistledonicelypod@gmail.com, because we are a podcast. Or you can leave us a message on our specially set up phone number, which, Rory, do you have the number there? Because I certainly don't.
It is 484-483-6763, which is also 4844-TDN-POD.
Nice. So there you go, because once again, what are we boys?
We are a podcast.
Which would make sense for every piece of merchandise to say that we're a podcast, right?
And what can you win? Indeed it would. A t-shirt that says, "This will do enterprises."
Yeah. So yeah, we've had a few entries on both mediums so far. They're making us laugh a lot, and we're making them, you know, we're enjoying them. I think we originally said the top three would get them, so yeah. I think that's what we're going to stay at. Unless we get an absolute ton of them, in which case we may revise that. But for now, top three. And yeah, we'll reveal the winners, I think, on our New Year's episode. Is that the plan?
Yes. So you've probably, at the point of listening to this, got about 2 weeks. Get it in by Christmas Day at the absolute latest. And then we will announce the winners on New Year's Eve. Our New Year's Eve episode.
If you send us a recording on Christmas Day, then we will send you a t-shirt because you're clearly a very lonely individual.
It's just somebody crying into a brandy. Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah, please don't do that, guys.
Kind of do. That'd be very funny. But
Christmas
yes.
is a time for coming together, but not to here. That extent.
We will not be accepting entries after Christmas Day. So
after midnight strikes on Christmas morning.
Yeah. So get in, win a t-shirt. I want to hear what nonsense you have to say about yourselves. You've only got a couple of weeks at the point of this being released. You boys excited to hear the rest of Annie Lennox's story?
Yeah.
Yeah, Johnny and I were commenting last week that you really bailed out quickly on the... We sort of spent an awful lot of time on the first album, and then we're like, and they've got another five albums. Anyway, time to go, bye!
Well, I should have... You're right. You're 100% right. And I should have prefaced the whole thing with... She's got a fuck ton of material out there, and we can't go into everything. We're not going to mention everybody's favorite songs or favorite albums. And
sometimes you just got to play the hits. That's it. That's what people are here for.
Exactly. Get on stage, play the hits, and then get back home for Coronation Street. It's just.
I wish.
Yeah, I know. I that was the thing with researching this, was just like, we can't talk about everything. There's so much. She's done so much, and she's had such a massive career, and also a workhorse as well. Like, the Eurythmics released something like 8 albums in 8 years, and it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Well, I mean, they did live beside each other, so, you know, wasn't much of a commute.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Yeah, all right, fair enough. Yeah, everybody can just do it.
Yeah,
all neighbors.
You two guys are living beside each other, so you could be cranking out several more podcast episodes without me.
It's true.
Yeah. Instead, you're spending it
We're working on our album.
I can tell, just vomiting outside taxis after having too many vodka sodas.
We're working on our album. We're just waiting on a hit.
I'm just saying, boys, you know, I'm the dead wood here. The two of you can really take this to another level.
You're the Pete Coombs of the entire situation. Johnny and I, we just need our vacation go to Australia. In Wagga Wagga.
Yeah, and then decide to leave you behind.
I'll be all right with that, boys. You know, I'll wish you well.
Okay, so where we left off was, to Chris's point, very good point, that basically they had their massive hit album, Sweet Dreams, open brackets are made of this, close brackets. everybody went bananas for it in 1983, and then they released multiple albums afterwards. But we're talking about Annie Lennox here, we're not talking about the Eurythmics, and during this time, during the success of the Eurythmics, Annie was obviously meeting new people, getting out to see the world. She was just a wee girl from Aberdeen, and now she was seeing all these different people and experiencing all these different things. And in 1984, she met the German-born Hare Krishna devotee Radha Raman.
Oh, God, this guy sounds like bad news.
Yes. So this is definitely some sort of pseudonym. I couldn't find his real name because Radha... And I apologize if I mispronounce things, but Radha Raman is some sort of prophet or symbol related to the religion. I think he took this on as a persona, but she met him at a concert in Stuttgart, and she married him 3 weeks later. So,
oh dear.
Wow.
Yeah. He persuaded her to give up booze, meat and coffee. So she became a vegetarian. She wasn't drinking coffee anymore. She wasn't drinking anything. He taught her, in quotations, taught her how to be
Hang
happy.
On. So she had. When was the last time she had a calzone?
Oh, I think she's now a meat eater. I think this was just a period in her time.
So oh, good, because okay. I don't want... Yeah, that's... Without having meatball calzones in your life, what's the point?
Yeah, since 1984, that would be terrible. Yeah. No reason to live. But that is probably why her music's so sad.
Probably why she looks significantly healthier than me, despite being about 30 years older than
she
me.
She does look incredible for, like, this. I don't want to keep going on about her looks because it's very superficial, but she looks incredible for her age. Anyway, so yeah, she met this Hare Krishna dude. They got married 3 weeks later. He told her to give up all this stuff, told her to be happy. Surprisingly, everybody who cared about her in her life was like, what the fuck are you doing? This is a danger. This is all red flags. Stop this. I mean, she basically formed a cult. Like, let's face it. She joined a cult. Whatever this guy was in, I don't know, and I apologize if we've got Hare Krishnas listening to us. I don't think we do. I'd be surprised if that's our demographic.
Furious Hare Krishna just taking his headphones out as we speak.
But, like, it just seems super weird and creepy, this whole situation. And so it was, I think, like 3 months where she kind of woke up, came to her senses, and then filed for divorce. But apparently this absolute D-bag blackmailed her for $100,000. Otherwise, he would release intimate photos of her that he had taken at times. Like, this whole fucking thing is just, it's so shitty. And it just lends into this whole, and I don't know, I don't obviously don't know her, didn't know her back then, but like, I just think she was pretty naive. She was like, because Aberdeen is a, for those people that don't know, Aberdeen's this tiny, like not tiny, but it's a city. It is a big city. It's an oil city up in the northeast of Scotland, but it's pretty far away. It's probably like our fourth biggest city, but it's far away. It's kind of removed. It's very windy. And so,
very grey.
Yeah, it does have like a small town feel to it. And I think like her going to London pretty early on, joining this band and getting into it, I do think she maybe was just like got swept up in the lifestyle. And this guy just came in and just messed with her, which is unfortunate. But she got out of that bad situation, which is great. And then a few years later, in 1988, she met and married documentary and movie producer Yuri Fruchtman, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, F-R-U-C-H-T-M-A-N-N. And he was like a crewman on a TV show that was doing a documentary style thing about the Eurythmics, and that's how she met him and was just like, you're my boy, which is quite cool, quite sweet.
I quite fancy you.
Yeah, I think so. And this seemed a much, much healthier relationship. They lasted much longer. They had kids and everything, which we'll get into in a moment. But this was a big year for her in 1988. I've screwed up my timeline here. I'm gonna have to Google something. When was Nelson Mandela's 70th birthday, guys? Come on, quick. I can't believe you don't know this off the top of your head. Unbelievable. It is 1988. Okay. So, yeah, I've just thrown one thing because I basically I'm saying how good this year was for her, because my third point is the fact that she did a cover of Put a Little Love in Your Heart with Al Green for the movie soundtrack of the movie Scrooged. And it was basically going to be like the amazing cap in her year was the fact that she got to work with Bill Murray and Al Green, but that was in 1984. This all happened in 1988. I'm just all over the place.
Right, let's take it from the top. Jesus, we'll start the whole thing again.
Unbelievable.
Just rewind.
Hang on, let me just get a calzone out. Just start again, get that energy.
Don't worry about it. So 88, she meets Yuri. They're in love. She's happy. She performs Nelson Mandela's 70th birthday. He obviously loves it because she gets invited back to his 90th birthday. Everything's going great. A couple of years later, she has a daughter.
Isn't Mandela in prison still in 1988?
Yes. And it's apparently, well...
Such depends, a good performance that he heard it from
yeah,
himself.
Yeah, it depends on how much you are not a cynic, and I am very cynical, but apparently this concert to bring attention to the situation that he was in helped get him released. It brought attention and you know, the activism worked. I don't know if that's the case, but sure, let's say it did. You know, Annie Lennox and everybody else that played at the 70th birthday released Nelson Mandela. Literally like months later, I think it was like he was 70 or 71 when he got out.
Thanks, Annie Lennox.
You're welcome. So, 1990, she had a daughter with Yuri. Called Lola, and this was the same year that Eurythmics disbanded. And disbanded is probably the best way to describe it, because it's similar to their relationship. They didn't break up. They didn't say, like, we're done, we're never performing. They're just like, we want to do our own thing. She kind of said, I want to go and focus on my family. Maybe we want to pursue our own things. We want some space from each other. There was no massive, like, tumultuous situation that happened. It was just them stepping away from each other. But it didn't mean that she stopped working. This is when she starts her solo career. So we're into the 90s, and it is her, in my opinion, doing her best work. Weirdly enough, she's doing it with a manager called Simon Fuller. And I don't know if you guys recognize that name.
Isn't he the one that went on to make all the pop bands? Like,
he set up American Idol, didn't he?
Yes, he is that.
Yeah, that one.
Yes, the guy that spawned Pop Idol, American Idol, X Factor, everything
else. That's right.
I think we have him to thank for Simon Cowell. So yes, he was a guy. He also managed the Spice Girls. And he credits Annie Lennox to the Spice Girls' success. And it's an interesting kind of, you know, the reasoning behind it is basically, you know, the Spice Girls had been given their names, their individual nicknames of Scary and Posh and Baby and whatever else from the British press. And Annie Lennox had obviously had all this shit from the press about, like, oh, are you a woman? Are you a man? Are you, like, how do you want us to refer to you? And she's like, just refer to me as a human, but also leaning into the persona and all this type of stuff. And so when she met the Spice Girls, she said, like, just lean into your personas. Just do it. Go for it. Enjoy it. It doesn't matter. You are who you are, but you can just have fun with it. And that's what they did. And it made sense. It made them very popular because people were just like, I'm baby. I want to be spice. I want to be sporty. Whatever else.
Spice, spice.
Yes. Was there not a spice, spice? Like a super spicy spice?
Old spice.
And so the Fuller in particular says like the girls accepted this. They lent into it, and it was because of Annie Lennox's advice as why they became as popular as they were. It's also worth noting that her husband, Yuri, was a producer on Spice World as well, so we've got him to thank for that.
Hey, look, I think Spice World's actually quite a good album, so, you know.
No, it's the movie Spice World.
Oh, okay, with the yeah, bus. That's one of the worst things that's ever been created on this planet.
Yes. So, 1992... couple of years after Yuri have split up, she's had her daughter. She's now working with Simon Fuller, and she releases Diva. And I think all of us have listened to Diva.
Yeah, I listened to most of it on the way home today, but I also did a bit of research on the kind of background of it. And if you would indulge me for a second, I'd written some bits and pieces down.
Be a diva about it.
Exactly. So as you said, she began writing this album while she was pregnant, and apparently this album took a long time for her to make because she kind of felt paralyzed writing without her mate Stuart's guidance. And supposedly she was struggling to kind of create art because she was quite content. You know, she was happily married and she was had a baby on the way. She later confessed, "Sometimes I feel I'm just not miserable enough." And she was really struggling with writer's block. And then, and I think part of the reason, I'm assuming, is because Stuart did a lot of the writing when he was in the Eurythmics. And it took her 15 months to do it. And when you listen to it, it's very different to the Eurythmics in style and substance. And, you know, it's much poppier. Is that fair to say? Traditional pop.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like Johnny. You're our music expert. I think we've done that, given you that title.
I don't actually know that very well beyond the hits on the album. But yeah, what is pop? I mean, I definitely think it is a bit more than that. You'd notice it being different to the Eurythmics.
I wouldn't say it's super. It's not super synthy or anything.
No,
like that.
It's really stepped away from that, which is great. Yeah. It's definitely more 90s than 80s.
Yeah, you could imagine, you know, this Eurythmics being used in, like, a Tron movie, and this album could be used in a 1990s romantic comedy vehicle starring Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell as a bit of a rough and ready type.
I want to see that movie. That sounds amazing.
You could call it Walking on Broken Glass or something effect. That sounds amazing. Just tie into the song. You know, she comes along and he's got kids, but he's not ready to open up. And then she comes in and gets him to open up. But you know, there's a process. There's love. Love is lost. Love comes back again, etc.
And stop talking, because somebody will steal this idea.
I think I've seen this movie.
Don't worry about it. That we can still make another one. Like we haven't seen 12 Spider-Man films.
That's true. It's the Goldie Hawn metaverse. So the album was released on April 6th, 1992.
I've just got this idea of all the different Goldie Hawns fighting each other now.
Spider-Man meme, but with Goldie Hawn.
Yeah. Sorry.
So the album debuts at number one. It has since sold more than 1.2 million copies in the UK alone. It only reached number 23 in the US. But the album also won a Brit Award for the British Album of the Year, and it also received several Grammy nominations. And I believe it won the Best Long Form Music Video. I was kind of reading something about what she did. They released some kind of documentary style version of the album, which sounded quite cool, where she did like 7 or 8 different videos all released at once. Mm-hmm. Which sounded interesting, but not interesting enough for me to go and actually watch it. but just to get back into the Lennox banger territory, The opening song, I think, on the album is Walking on Broken Glass, which is just an absolute tune. Well, and I would put it up against any 1980s, 1990s pop song. It is amazing.
It's a great song.
Entirely agree.
Imagine that piano coming in at the beginning and Goldie Hawn strutting down the street. Beverly Hills.
But again, this is what I was talking about. Like, I think we mentioned it very, very early on. Like, her the Eurythmics as well as her, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, introductions to the songs are just so recognizable immediately that it's just like, oh, this is going to be amazing. And yeah, Walking on Broken Glass is one of them. I just want to correct you that it starts with Y, with Y, which is how I opened last week's episode. But that, like,
okay. Which is also a very good song, but is, you know, yeah, it's not exactly a toe tapper. Have you guys watched the video for Walking on Broken Glass?
I don't think so.
Yes, that's the one with the makeup.
It's got Hugh Laurie in it and John Malkovich.
Yes, yeah.
So it's based on Dangerous Liaisons, and it's at that time Hugh Laurie, who most people probably know in America as House. It's also in Veep, plays Tom Jane in Veep. But at that point, he was better known for his comedy in the UK, specifically Blackadder, and he plays a bumbling version of George the Fourth there, and he's basically playing George the Fourth in this video, and Annie Lennox is kind of the bored by him, and then John Malkovich's character comes in, kind of the Dangerous Liaisons version of his character, and it's all about that, and I'm like, okay, you've got two randomly huge stars in your music video here. It's very odd, but it's very enjoyable.
Doesn't she just get sauced all the way through that film? Like, it's her just getting wrecked on champagne is what I remember.
Think so. I think she's wearing a very, like, interesting outfit in it as well. She's wearing some sort of Turkish headdress, which was particularly striking. And it's very strange, but I mean, that song is just incredible.
I'm jealous of the readers right now, because I'm definitely going to be putting a 30-second backing of this song while we're talking about it, and it's just such a tune.
Yeah, it really is. I'm going to go watch a Goldie Hawn movie after this.
I can't remember anything else that she's been in.
Doesn't matter.
They're all the same.
They're all the same movie.
And then that album also has Little Bird, right?
Does it?
I think so.
Why not?
Little Bird, I believe, is the end of this experimental video. Oh, she's married to Kurt Russell? I didn't know this. Sorry, I'm now Googling Goldie Hawn. So I've got this. And Kate Hudson's her daughter? What?
Yeah.
Should we just do an episode?
How did you not know any of
Goldie Hawn?
I don't.
I mean, she's delightful. She really is delightful.
Not know enough about Goldie Hawn, apparently. Anyway, back to Annie Lennox. This isn't a Goldie Hawn podcast. Yeah, Little Bird is, I think, the culmination. I mean, it'd be a great spin-off. Is a culmination of this, like, video, and it's all her different personas, I guess. There is, you know, the suit and the short hair from Sweet Dreams. There is the sex worker from Strangers in Love. There is there's one where she's a housewife, I think, etc., etc. And I think, again, to your point, I think in the video she's pregnant as well. It's another one I would recommend watching.
It's also so interesting, like, you think about all these modern artists, you know, we mentioned earlier about, like, you know, Lady Gaga doing similar things on talk shows, or, you know, like even Beyonce with, like, conceptual album that's half a film, half music. And, like, she was doing all these things, like, back in the 80s and 90s. It's sort of amazing, you think, the length of that influence and how far it's gone now in terms of, like, actual sort of conceptual approach to music making. It's cool.
Ah, it's so cool.
She was very cool. She is very cool.
Yeah, can I read you the Rolling Stone review of it? Because it's pretty pretentious, but it also
just, it's, I don't know. Music reviews
are, yeah, exactly.
this one gets it for me. State-of-the-art soul pop, Annie Lennox's solo debut is sonically gorgeous. It also declares her aesthetic independence. Ace Session Man polished Diva's gloss, and producer Stephen Lipson operates in hyperdrive. But these 11 songs are fiercely those of a sister doing things for herself. 3 years after her last outing with Dave Stewart, her cohort in Eurythmics, Lex voids any notion that he was her Svengali and she merely the MTV beauty with stunning pipes. Writing nearly all of Diva, she manages a whirlwind tour of mainstream R&B and retains her singular persona, an ice queen thirsting to be melted by love.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
I don't know why I said it like Jeremy Clarkson.
Ice queen, you know, thirsting to be loved. Yeah, I mean, look, it was, a quadruple platinum album. It was very much that kind of stepping away from the Eurythmics and just being like, yeah, I can do this, and I am hugely talented. And as that obviously very astute and intelligent man that wrote that article said, she wrote the entire album by herself, which is...
Well, so it's kind of cool because, like, you know, often you hear about, you know, the bands, you know, having a hiatus and, you know, individual members go off to do their solo projects, and, you know, you never really hear much of it, or it's a bit of a flop. Mm-hmm. It's like quite exciting that she did that confidently, and it was amazing. You know, it's like brilliant.
Don't hear much about Dave Stewart's solo album, do we?
Yeah.
He did all right. He was doing stuff. He was doing bits. He married one of the ladies from Bananarama.
Oh really?
Yeah, he had a couple of hits. I think he did some movie soundtracks, but he was doing okay. I think he was a talented musician. I don't want to detract from that. Like, he was good at what he did, but I do think, again, to that article's point, that a lot of people were just like, well, she can sing and she's good looking, and that's pretty much all she can do. And then Diva just kind of knocked that out of the park entirely in the terms of, like, no, I'm way more than that. And then 1993, she gives birth to her second daughter, Tally, and it was a couple of years later where she releases Medusa, which is her second solo album in 95. And Medusa is entirely a covers album, and I kind of like it. I like covers in general. I like the idea of what's the word I'm looking for? Like, somebody putting something out there and then other artists picking it up and seeing if they can improve on it or change it or twist it to other people's tastes and likes. I like, you know, rock and punk, so I like it when people do rock and punk covers of different songs or songs that are not in that genre. And that's kind of what she did. She just took a bunch of songs that she enjoyed and she released them. And it was popular again. It was like number one in the UK. It went double platinum. She released like four singles from it. It was not well received by the critics. And I think that's mainly because it was a cover album. Like, I think critics can be a bit wanky with that stuff. Like, it was already good. Why do you need to do it again? There's no need. Weirdly, one of her more famous and more popular songs, No More I Love Yous, is on that, and people don't realize it's a cover because the original song was...
is that Shakespeare's Sisters or something like that?
Oh, is that who did it originally? I don't remember. It's like a small 80s band that it just was not popular. It's very similar to the original. I did listen to it. Hers is vastly better, in my opinion. But I think the band toured with Eurythmics for a short period of time, or maybe the Tourists, and she just always thought of the song and always liked the song, and that's why she covered it. But it's, again, hugely popular song, and a lot of people just assume that it's hers. So 1998, she is reunited with Dave Stewart, and unfortunately it's over the death of their friend and former band member, Pete Coombs. He seemed to struggle with drugs his entire life, and it seemed like that's what eventually ended his life, unfortunately. But the two of them, after basically not speaking for, 8 years, and it wasn't,
she's fairly open about this in interviews. It's not like they disliked each other or hated each other, or maybe they did and maybe they were lying, but she just was like, we were kind of done, we needed space for a long time. It was kind of like, again, we go back to that holiday that Chris and I had in Florida, and when we got to the end of it, like, let's just not talk to each other for a wee while because I'm done with you for a bit. I still like you, but
what are you trying to say? I was trying to get in touch with you every day for months.
Yeah, we just needed some space. Up. I was doing my solo career.
I am the Dave to this relationship.
The Dave's chair. But they started performing together and collaborating again, and they released Peace. Which is the first Eurythmics album that was released since 1989. It was made to highlight their concerns with global conflict. And this is when they become like hardcore into kind of changing, trying to change the world and becoming an activist and, you know, trying to do good in the world with her fame and their fame. The great thing is about all the profits from this album tour went to Amnesty International and to Greenpeace. I don't know. Did you guys know this album? Did you listen to it at all?
I don't. I didn't even realize Eurythmics had got back together, to be honest.
Yeah, I didn't love it. It's a bit like... I'm just a very cynical person. And when like this stuff happens... artists trying to like change the world and being super earnest, I'm always really suspicious of it. Just like, what is your agenda? And I do think these people are probably genuine and probably real. I'm just always like, and it does seem like something that she kind of believed in her entire life, which is cool. The interesting thing, and maybe I'm reading a bit too much into it, is not long after she reunited with Dave and they started recording together, she got divorced from her husband.
Oh, she's back with Hare Krishna. See back. They always turn up.
No, not
they're
yet.
Always in the street. Yeah, so he could have been
at the train station. look, I don't know. Who knows whether it was related or not. They're just, their relationship is fascinating because of that like immediate kind of physical connection and then the split up, but still working together and effectively living together, but not being, you know, sexually, what was it? Not making whoopee. But there was points where I think Annie Lennox was like invited to the birth of Dave's first child. And like the mother was a bit like, why is she here? Why is this your ex-girlfriend telling
Annie,
me?
Annie was in the birth room.
Yes. She was telling the mother to push and stuff like that. Like their relationship was always just a bit.
Not
like,
now, Annie Lennox. Fuck off.
And she was singing it as well. Pooh,
walking on broken. Shut up. Get me an epidural, you bitch.
But yeah, so I don't know. Like, I'm reading it way too much into it. But so the next album that is released, which is another solo album, is Bear. And it's a decent album. I think I listened to it the first time. This was like 2003 now. This is where we are. But it's got A Thousand Beautiful Things, a song called A Thousand Beautiful Things in it, which is a popular one. I think it's a great song, worth a listen. The album in general is good. Again, very popular. She also, a couple of years later, performed in Live 8, which is, you know, the re-upping of the Live Aid concert that happened in 1985. And this was a big deal for her because, you know, she gets heavily involved in like African charities and AIDS charities, and, you know, to your point, she was at the Freddie Mercury benefit and everything like that. This was a massive thing for her and had been for a long time. And she was invited to perform at Live Aid, but wasn't able to because she had nodes, those like throat things that kind of mess you up and stop you from being able to sing. And she kind of suffers from throat and voice problems fairly regularly throughout her life, unfortunately. But I think this was a massive deal for her that she was able to come back and perform for everybody in this, you know, for this, you know, company that she hugely believes in, this charity that she believes in. And like I said, this is when she gets hardcore, like the peace stuff, the Live Aid stuff, she's hardcore into activism. She almost, like, the music becomes secondary. This becomes more of her life, more of her career. 2007, she releases the single Sing, and she releases that with 23 other female singers. And this is where she also starts the Sing Foundation. And the aim of this was to raise money and awareness for HIV and AIDS, particularly in Africa. And around, I believe it was particularly in relation to when, like, it gets passed from mother to child and things like that, and trying to help prevent that and, like I said, raise awareness and money to help treat that sort of situation. She also releases...
Rory, you've skipped over one thing. Well, you might be getting back to it, but in between that, in... very close to your heart, in 2003, she released a song called Into the West for Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, and won her an Oscar for Best Song.
Yes,
it did.
Which I didn't realize.
Yes, she did. People fucking love that song as well. Like, people that are into Lord of the Rings love that song. And it's a good song. It's a nice song. It's just, it comes at the end of the last film, the third film, where... the film is ended four times and it's still ending, and then an Annie Lennox song comes on. It's like, well, you could have done with this 20 minutes ago. Then it would have been
she'd
nice.
Have been walking on broken glass. It would
be
amazing.
It would be brilliant. That's the thing. I've not touched on it, and I'll mention some of the awards, but she's been, this entire career, she's been winning awards. She's been winning, like, Album of the Year, Brit Award here, fucking Grammy here, Oscar for the fun of it. Why not get an Oscar? She's Annie Lennox. She can do what she wants. But yes, so after she creates the Sing Foundation, she also... that song, Sing, was off the album Songs of Mass Destruction, which, you know, politics, political. It was obviously critical of the war in Iraq in the early 2000s, which, again, you know, she's using her celebrity to bring attention to things that she is passionate about. I just, you know, distrust anybody.
You know what our problem is here? Yeah, I was always told... A newspaper should never start a campaign that it can't win. So it always needs to do something that's somewhat attainable. And she's doing these concerts to, you know, take end world famine and end AIDS and the war in Iraq. She needs to lower her aspirations and do a concert that is like getting a stop sign or a speed camera installed in her
new bike lanes
in her street. New bike lane.
Like, and then fill in the potholes in Boise, Idaho.
Exactly. And she needs to just have a couple of smaller campaigns that she, and get a couple W's. Dream under
big,
her
Chris.
Belt.
You got to dream big.
Yeah, but you know, it's like these boxers, you know, you start with the sort of smaller fights that you know that you can win, and then eventually you keep going up. You know, she can't just go straight to eradicating world hunger. She's not Jeff Bezos.
I just it's just, I mean, look, she is, in musical terms, she is Jeff Bezos. Like, she's huge.
Actually, that's not a fair comparison, because Jeff Bezos could end world hunger could.
And chooses not to.
Giant penises into space.
Yeah. And look, I do think it's great, and I don't want to disparage. I'm just always like, I think it's my Britishness about it, of like, ooh, let's just be quiet about this situation, which is terrible.
I'm sure AIDS will solve itself, right?
Exactly. It's a horrible, horrible thing to think and consider. But so yes, so She does her Live Aid. She does her Peace album. She does Songs of Mass Destruction. And then, like, every other, you know, massive singer, songwriter, celebrity, she releases her Christmas album. And I don't know why they do this. So in 2010...
It's baffling. They're all the same songs as well.
Yes. Like, I... Like, Dylan's done it. Like, obviously, famously, Bowie has his little drummer boy. Like, all of them do it. They're not good.
There's probably some mad clause in the contract no one's read that they're like, actually, you owe us one more album. It's like, okay, let's smash out a Christmas one. That'll do. Get it done.
Look, and she's got a beautiful voice. And if I'm going to
listen... Yeah, you can sing Silent Night, can't you, Annie? Yeah, bash it out in 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. The whole album in 20 minutes. Look, she's got a beautiful voice, and hearing these songs sung by Annie Lennox is excellent. It's
This is a bad time to tell you that I've made a Christmas album for us.
That would be amazing. That would be brilliant. Get on the train.
Looking for a topic for the Christmas episode, yes. So we'll just play that.
It'd be brilliant. Entire album would be so good. It's called Christmas Cornucopia. It's not even a good name, right. Annie. Come on, you're better than this. You're really better than this. And it's all...
Yeah.
It's all like the songs, the Christmas songs you would sing in church. It's not, you know, Santa Baby or I don't remember any other. It's not the Pogues. It's not anything like that. It's just
she did an excellent Fairy Tale to New York. That right, would be good.
Exactly. But she did this, and look again. Fair play to her. And if you're an Annie Lennox fan. And as much as I'm a general fan, I'm not somebody who's going to sit down and listen to her albums all the time. But if you love Annie Lennox, get this album. Listen to it. Christmas is just around the corner. It's fine. It's very fine. I just don't particularly like Christmas music, and I just don't know why they do it. She was born on Christmas Day.
I was listening to last year's Christmas episode earlier, and... You also say that you don't like Christmas movies, and I'm starting to think that you just don't like Christmas and that you have got a black heart. So,
I mean, I've spent most of this episode saying that I don't think people should do charity work, which is not true. It's not true, but yeah, you might not be wrong.
Taking back my donation to your charity that you work for.
Please don't. Does your local area need a speed camera or something to that effect, or just
I have a local charity that I work for. I'm fine.
A footpath. Yeah, I know, but you're never going to solve education, Rory. I mean, you know, something attainable.
Just trying to. By the way, if you're listening, give money to Brooklyn Free School.
Oh, here we go.
Go to brooklynfreeschool.org.
No, and Johnny donate. And I did not sanction
this. Is not endorsed.
Good charity. They're a democratic school. They do well for some underprivileged children. But that's what I'm filling potholes. That's what I'm doing.
Right. Well, I'd like us to fill in the pothole that is your black heart because you hate Christmas.
I don't hate Christmas. Fill it in with love. I don't need it. I'm fine without it. Did I say that in last year's episode?
Probably. No, you didn't say you hated it. You said that you hate Christmas movies.
Oh, I mean, well, everybody's in for a treat for this year's Christmas episode. Because
Have you seen the Christmas movie with Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell?
I would watch that. Does that exist?
He plays Santa Claus in it. And she turns up as Mrs. Claus right at the end of the first one, and then she's in the second one.
Is that true?
I forget what it's called. It's a Netflix film. Yeah, 100%.
That sounds brilliant.
Wow. I can't remember what it's called.
I'm a massive Kurt Russell fan. Him as Santa Claus sounds excellent. Does he kill a mimic alien?
No, he's Santa. I forget exactly what the plot is. It's not great, but... No.
Is it called Big Trouble in Little North Pole?
Big Trouble in Little Lapland.
Anyway, look, back to the Annie Lennox story. Yeah, look, she releases the Christmas album, and it's great. This was 2010. She did meet and marry a Dr. Mitch Besser.
Wait, hang on. What happened to the other guy?
They got divorced when she hooked back up with Dave.
She was boning Dave, as you like to say.
Yeah. We don't know what they were doing, but yes, in 1998, they got divorced.
Okay.
And here's the thing. Look.
She was in the bathroom.
Look, rock and roll lives, and we've talked about pretty much every celebrity we talk about does nefarious things. Annie Lennox is no different than the others. So she married Dr. Mitch Besser in like 2012. She met him like 2 years earlier while he was still married. And his wife filed for divorce when she found out about his relationship with Annie Lennox. So,
okay.
You know, everybody does their thing, you know. And now they're still married. They're still hopefully happily married. And look, I barely touched on really her activism or her charity work. It is a massive part of her life. She is a huge, you know, personality in, you know, fighting poverty in Africa, in feminism, in AIDS and HIV research. She was famous for wandering, like turning up to events and playing concerts in her HIV positive t-shirt. She was in movies. She acted a little bit. She wasn't particularly that great. She did soundtracks. She did like Dracula. She did Scrooge, as I mentioned. She did Lord of the Rings. I mean, she's still in the news these days as an activist and like I mentioned earlier with the whole trans rights, movement. She is a big proponent of that, obviously. And people talk to her again because of kind of, not that it's the same thing, but the stuff that she went through early 80s. She's promoting her daughter's careers. They're models and actresses. And singers, I think one of them is a singer. So she's kind of all over the place, which is just like, when you look at it all, it's pretty impressive, this like insane career and this back catalog of amazing songs and great albums from like Annie Lennox, Faye Aberdeen, you know, it's just kind of bonkers. Yeah, I got like one last wee story to tell, which I really like, and then I want to get like kind of your last thoughts. But so a couple of years ago, it was like 2017, she tweeted this email that she got, that Annie Lennox got to her personal account somehow. And this is Annie Lennox. This is now 2017, so she's global star, 15 albums, so millions of copies, multiple double platinums. She's won like 8 Brit Awards, 4 Grammys, Golden Globes, an Oscar. She's an OBE from the Queen. And then Kylie emails her. And Kylie says, Dear Annie Lennox, Kylie here from blank Radio Los Angeles. I came across your music online and really like what I've heard. I'm the new music coordinator for a station that has over 100,000 unique listeners each month. I find artists who I think have potential and get them in rotation on our station. If you'd like, please send over the MP3 for your latest single. I'll forward it to Glenn, our program director here at Blank, to see if he's interested in putting you in rotation.
That's brilliant.
It basically goes on. And then says, like, the best part is if they really like your music, they'll cover all the marketing expenses. You can check them out at blank. Please let them know Kylie referred you, and you should be in. Let me know your thoughts, and be sure to send me that MP3. Regards,
I'm going to make you a star.
It's just...
All right. That, I mean, that's fantastic, but at the same time, that also could potentially be like one of those bots, you know?
I know.
Because we get those emails from so-called podcast companies and stuff, and they're obviously bots. So I hope it's just Kylie being incredibly naive and having never heard from her, and she's like 21 or something.
That's the thing. It could be a bot. It could be a bot. It could be just some whatever Gen Z or whatever that just hasn't heard of Annie Lennox yet, which is nice. She's never heard of Annie Lennox. She's going to get to listen to all her music and experience.
She's right as well. She does have potential. Yes. She's got some good good tunes.
Over like 100,000 listeners. Maybe hopefully Glenn put her into rotation and her career's finally taken off.
I'd love it if Kylie came to Glenn with that. Like, Gotta hear this. That sounds an awful lot like Annie Lennox. Yeah, yeah. It is. How do you?
Yeah. So, I mean, after this, what do you guys think? Annie Lennox.
Amazing. I mean, it's funny because I think you sort of just know she was influential and talented and the music was great. But I think this is just like underlined in my mind that she arguably might be the best thing to come out of Aberdeen ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Annie Lennox, in parentheses, yeah. Best thing to come out of Aberdeen.
Close parentheses. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just happy that we've done an episode on a famous Scottish woman because, Rory, I know for a long time you've been really reluctant to do any episodes on women because you say that they're not as important as men. But then when we said that Annie Lennox was dressed up like a man, you said it was okay.
It's the only way I would accept it. It's the only way I would accept it, yeah.
No, I would encourage all readers who aren't aware of Annie Lennox or not, I'm sure they know who she is, but go and listen to her stuff because she has some stuff that I just didn't realize was Annie Lennox's songs, and they're some of them you can hold up to any pop song from the 80s, 90s. She's a hugely important person. And I also quite like the fact that we do a lot of episodes where like their Scottishness is very important. I wouldn't consider her necessarily super Scottish. She's very much transcended that.
Yeah.
She's a global figure.
Yeah. I mean, she talks of Scotland and she's still got a bit of an accent and wears tartan and things like that. But it's, I you're completely right. She's a global figure. Yeah. She's beyond Scotland, beyond Aberdeen. But yeah, I would just say, I think what the Easter egg for this episode is going to be is just a snippet of her talking, because beyond her singing voice, one of my favorite things about researching this episode has just been listening to interviews with her, because she's got one of the best accents I've ever heard in my life. And it's changed over time, softened and become a bit Americanized at times, but it is just lovely. And she's just, I want her to start doing books on tape or just record. She should do a podcast.
Lord of the Rings.
Yes. Oh my God. That would be incredible. Because it's just a lovely, lovely voice. And like, yeah, her songs, for me, look, it's not everything. It's not stuff I'm going to listen to all the time, but she's got some hits, and like her best of stuff is just brilliant. So yeah, this was a fun one. It was, it's kind of part of the reason why we do this podcast is we go into it not quite sure and then come out the other end being like, oh, I don't know. It turns out Annie Lennox is pretty good. That woman that's won, 15 Grammys and 7 Brit Awards and has an OBE from the Queen is actually.
Who knew?
All right. Yeah. And this is, honestly, this is probably finally the thing that she was wanting. Like, she finally got the accolades from Thistle Do Nicely Pod, and so she can, you can take a rest, Annie. You don't need to impress us anymore.
They're there.
Yeah.
Go get yourself a stop sign on your road, Annie.
So with that, Thistle Do, lads. Thistle Do Nicely. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like the show, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and write a quick review on whichever podcasting app you're using. It really does help us out. We'd love to hear from you either via our email, thistledonicelypod@gmail.com, or via facebook.com/thistledopod, or follow us on Instagram and Twitter @thistledopod. You can also visit our website, thistledonicelypod.com. All original music in this podcast is written and performed by our very own Johnny Naismith. Please like and subscribe to his YouTube channel and follow him on Instagram @JAW_KNEE_. Love, hugs, and kisses from the Thistle Do Nicely Pod.
I think anyway, you see, everybody, because we're always wearing different things and Annie wears different wigs and such like, everybody thinks we're a real sort of fashion hip band and we'll be in fashion spreads and all this, but really, we're just out to make as much money as we possibly can in the shops.
plenty of sense to me. So you dressed up as Earl and you showed up, and then people didn't know what to do. Huh?
Well, the thing was, you know, there was all this talk about me being a transvestite and stuff, so I thought I'd give the people what they want.
Now, there had been a lot of talk about that?
Well, I had rumors, you know.
Well, we talked a lot about it.
Yeah. but when you started performing, your hair wasn't always the length that it is now, was it, when you started?
Well, I had a brain operation and had to get it cut, and afterwards I thought, it looks so good, you know. Why not keep it?
Now, you didn't. You did, or did you have? You didn't have a brain operation.
Well, I'd rather not talk about it again.
Yeah.
Keep talking about personal things with me.
Okay, now, so you had the hair short, and then was orange always the color you wanted?
Sure, I came out looking like this.
Yeah.